And I really want to be clear that I'm not, I'm really pro-science. I'm not being critical of science. What I think is, what I'm more trying to say is, science has been failed by society. Science is doing their job perfectly well. And it's like a relay race. They bring the baton, say, here it is, here's the information, take it. And there's no one there to take it. Or when they do take it, they drop it. Or they don't, rather than translating the data and the information into more human and perhaps spiritual or sacred terms, they just repeat it. And it gets repeated over and over and over again. And people hear the data, and they hear the data, and they begin to tune out. And the data can be kind of hard to relate to. 2 degrees centigrade is a very hard number to relate to, especially when it's actually 1.5 degrees centigrade. So we're 0.5 degrees from the smallest number we have. And we all have to, like, get freaked out about that. And we should, but it's a big lift for people. And it's a hard expectation to have of society. So, you know, like I say, my way to try to get through this is with language. And that's what this second chapter is a bit more about. And in particular, I take on the word environment. And, you know, I was talking about how I've been an environmentalist all these years. So I think I'm in a position to then say why I don't like the environment. And I think we should get rid of this word. So, you know, I did my time as an environmentalist, but now I've come to look at it from the other side of the world. So, you know, in college, I studied the environmental sciences, and later I became a poet and looked at all this language from the other side. And I realized I couldn't put any of it into a poem. And that really struck me as significant. And maybe that's why people were saying, no nature poems, please. Maybe these poetry editors just felt like that was a different world for them. I don't know. But we have this word environment, and I began to, I guess, just get suspicious of it. And then one day, I'm a painter, so I was painting a friend's, he had this room that he was going to turn into a dialogue room. So I was going to paint it for him, and I was going to use all these natural paints. And to keep me occupied, he gave me this tape. It was an interview between Ivan Illich, who is a famous intellectual, and this German linguist named Uwe Parksen. And this guy had written a book about plastic words. And he had discovered what he thought were a class of words that were kind of leading us, but which had absolutely no actual meaning. He looked at words like communication, transportation, development. These were words that and the reason he discovered them is because the German government decided to develop Freiburg, Germany, and which was a beautiful wine-growing area. And they had these massive plans to do all this development because they wanted to update transportation. They needed better communication networks. And he kept seeing this language over and over. And then he was at a conference in Mexico, and he heard the same words, only in Spanish. And he was standing with this one Mexican, and the Mexican looked and said, you know, you could run the whole world on 15 words. And it's kind of true. We keep running into these words. So I'm listening to this, and it just suddenly struck me. Environment is a plastic word. And the way these words work is they come out of science, and in science they make sense. I think of science language as like craft talk. You know, each of us in our worlds of business, we have our talk, and it really works well between us. But it doesn't always leap the border well. And he said sometimes these words leap the border, they get into society and they start doing damage. And, you know, one of the metaphors he uses is before we actually lay down a rail line or punch a logging road and take down a forest, we lay down a road of words. It's the words that go first, and it's the beliefs and ideas go first. And so when I had this feeling that environment was, you know, a plastic word, well, I was like, that's great. Environmentalism is, you know, trying to save the world with words made of plastic. So I did some research. I started looking into this word. And first, of course, I looked at their dictionary definitions. So Merriam-Webster Online defines nature as a creative and controlling force in the universe and the inherent character or basic constitution of a person or thing. Environment, on the other hand, is the circumstances, objects, and conditions by which one is surrounded, and the complex of physical, chemical, and biotic factors that act upon an organism or an ecological community and ultimately determine its form or survival. Note the difference? Nature, a creative and controlling force in the universe. Environment, a complex of physical, chemical, and biotic factors. Nature, inherent character, essence, environment, circumstances, objects, and conditions. An obvious question arises here. Why are we fighting on behalf of a complex of physical, chemical, and biotic factors and not a creative and controlling force in the universe? Why is that happening? And how much stronger would our arguments be if we could make that switch? So I had another piece of information about this whole word environment come to me from Carol Cooper, who is here. You remember giving me that book. It was a journal, a writing journal. And what these people had done is they had taken covers from old high school science textbooks and left some of the material inside and then filled blank pages with the rest and then rebound them. So Carol had given me one of these, and I'll read about that. So why from the very beginning do we verbally devitalize our subject? Shakespeare wrote, "One touch of nature makes the whole world kin." Would he have said the same about the environment? What other meanings and associations were lost when we traded nature for the environment? And why did we do it in the first place? The answer to that last question came to me quite accidentally one year in the form of a writing journal given by a friend. The journal had been bound using the old hardback covers of a 1950s high school science textbook. Inside were mostly blank pages with a few pages from the original textbook, inserted here and there for humor and interest. There was a section entitled Better People in a Better World, about eugenics. The importance of industry. The introduction, and another section about the importance of industry. The introduction crooned about such new terms as supersonic flight, motor jet, pulse jet, ramjet, turbojet, and on and on. Across the maroon cover, a cargo ship, an airplane, and a lone seagull cruised beneath the title, "Our Environment, How We Use and Control It." See? We needed a word that made nature something we could use and control. Because nature as a word still had the earth attached to its roots, so to speak, and it still had some sacred feeling about it. And you know, maybe it started out innocently enough. Science needed a word which perhaps worked better for them, but it left the border. And the fact that environmentalism then grabbed it and used it hasn't necessarily been good for us in the long run. So, you know, let me say a little bit more, because the environment is just a word. There's also a whole vernacular that goes around it, and we always hear it when we start talking about environmental issues. And someone actually wrote a book about it. It's called The Language of Environment by George Meyerson and Yvonne Ridden. In it, the authors describe an environet in which these technical terms and phrases hover in space and intersect. Today, we all recognize the terminology: hazard mitigation, environmental impact, parts per million, biomagnification, biodiversity, ecosystem, etc. The problem with this environment is that it hovers above the heads of ordinary people, people who may not be versed in the language of science and may not really want to be. For the listener, the earnest pleading of the science may be more threatening than enlightening, or even incomprehensible and faintly elitist. As a sad result, the most common thing between us, nature, becomes lost to our common speech. We feel we need a specific scientific vocabulary just to discuss it. I see shaking heads, so I think people have experienced this themselves. here's a little contrast. This is one of the things I did with this essay is I interspersed little clips of statements and poetry from the late 17 and early 1800s before the scientific mindset had really kicked in. Because they really speak, I think, to what I'm saying. So here's an example. This is Holderlin in 1798. "And, Mother of Nature, if a word with immense energy is needed, the people remember yours." I love that. There is this energy, you know, that we so often ignore. Here's Novalis in 1800. "When geometric diagrams and digits are no longer the keys to living things, and people see in poems and fairy tales the true history of the world." And here's Baudelaire. This is just a fragment. "The natural world is a spiritual world. The natural world is a spiritual house where the pillars that are alive." So, I ask in this essay, if we are to like leave this kind of technical language behind, then what? And when I first wrote this, I published it in Dark Mountain. If you ever want to really read some interesting writing and thinking about all this, Google Dark Mountain. You've probably heard people talk about the need for story. I've even heard Al Gore talk about it. We need Dark Mountain started that about 20 years ago in England. And the English are pretty intellectual folk, and these were some pretty, brainy people who had really given up on environmentalism as we know it and had walked away and said, we're not going to save this planet, and we need to face that, and we're not going to fix this system. We need total overhaul. And what they really began was a thought movement, and that's where kind of the story thing came from. So anyways, they printed this essay, and at the time, my answer to this question is, well, what follows if we do step away from a purely technical language? And I thought, well, it'll just come of its own, kind of organically. And then they published it. But later, I discovered that there actually is another answer to that.